Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 project here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Lee Hutchison, and Dallas King and myself make our way through the A24 filmography and along the way bring you interviews with the talent involved in front of and behind the camera. To celebrate our 150th episode, we are joined by two very special guests, Koganada and Justin H. Min, to discuss the making of After Yang. After Yang finally arrives in cinemas and on Sky Movies in the UK this week, and it was a pleasure to sit down with the film's writer and director and the man behind the titular character to discuss the making of the movie. Thanks so much to everyone who has joined us and supported us through 150 episodes so far, and I hope you'll enjoy this special interview and a bit of a bonus red carpet chat too at the end. I want to talk about that kind of opening scene and sort of both your involvements in it. Mm. Sort of, how did you go around sort of creating it? And what was it like for you to sort of perform in this kind of global dance-off?
Yeah, you know, I had written it into the script, and I just knew that I wanted to see this family literally in sync before we were going to kind of play with the loss in the family. Yeah, so it was as simple as that. You know, when I wrote it, I just thought, this is going to be the credit sequence. And then at one point I thought, no, we're not just going to see this family. We'll see all the people that we see with their families.
On the flip side, it was terrifying, traumatic, any other negative words that you can think of. But it was an incredible icebreaker. You know, when you start on a project and you're working with new actors and a new cast, you're always like, kind of feeling everything out, not really knowing how this is going to be. And this was truly one of the first scenes that we shot.
Yeah.
And so it's just such a great icebreaker, such energy. And we really felt like a cohesive family by the end of the dance. I mean, we had rehearsed a few times in the studio, and then on the day of, like, the energy and the adrenaline was pumping, and we were messing up and laughing and trying again. And it really felt like we had come together in that moment.
I always find your films very sort of calming and meditative. For me, going to the cinema is like a meditation for me. It allows me to sort of switch off from everything. And what I found here was there was this message of sort of the importance of sort of switching off and sort of enjoying life, not through a lens. As a famous philosopher once said, life moves pretty fast. If you don't look around every once in a while, you might miss it. So, I mean, how important was that message in the story? And, I mean, I guess it's almost sort of been exacerbated through the pandemic with everyone for a long time having to do everything almost sort of virtually and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think of it so much as a message, but you're absolutely right that it is... because at the end of the day, it is about attention, you know, and giving ourselves a moment to pay attention to things that become invisible to us, not because they lack value or they lack even a kind of magic in this world, but it gets lost in, you know, everydayness, you know, because they feel ordinary, even though it's not. You know, every day we walk around and there are remarkable things that are surrounding us. And we're looking for something special in life, and it's all around us. And so there is something about attending to the things that have grown invisible to us. And that could be people. You know, there was a point where I was thinking, like, oh, you know, Yang is like your grandparents in the corner who has all of life inside. They've lived this enormous life, and they have memories, they have heartbreak, they have all these things. But they're just in the corner, and they seem, you know, just like some, you know. And if we could unpack anyone, if I could unpack you, we would find universes, right? And so there is something about that. When I was younger, I felt like I wanted to, like, you know, find truth out somewhere on the mountains or something. And, you know, as I got older, I just thought, oh God, that's all around me. It's just like me, like, paying attention to it, you know. I'm sure that is there. I don't think I was set out to do it, but I think as I was kind of adapting it, I'm sure that was sort of in the DNA of it.
Yeah, it's probably me reading far too much, as with every sort of film. People can read far too much.
Yeah, no,
but one of the things I sort of find correlation with sort of Blade Runner in that Deckard, you know, it's through the death of his experience with Roy Batty and through the death of like an artificial intelligence sort of thing, he discovers his own humanity.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what Colin Farrell sort of goes through with Yang, which I thought was, but again, that might have been just reading too much into
beautiful.
It.
So, you know, it's funny, people have been asking him about his embodiment of a robot, and I love Rachel in Blade Runner. There's something so soulful. There's something so soulful about the way he embodies Yang, and it creates its own kind of vulnerability and mystery. But I love that comparison. I think that's fantastic.
How did you kind of approach the world building for the futures? The film avoids so many of the tropes and cliches we expect from what a future should look like. How did you sort of go around kind of constructing that and designing your vision of the future for the story?
Yeah, so, you know, there was in my mind a sort of backstory to it, that it was a post-apocalyptic future. So, I mean, we've seen a lot of dystopian visions of the future. And, you know, my idea of that future was a society that had been rebuilt in order to survive and had sort of made peace with nature, or kind of figured out how to integrate nature to be more sustainable. So that was sort of the start of it. And yeah, and I also, you know, like we're so, you know, our world right now is so filled with screens and monitors, and then you see a future and often you just see floating monitor, glass monitors and metal and steel. And I really did. Part of it was just creating these organic textures, but I also said, I don't ever want to see a screen in our future, and no wires. So, you know, we like removed all wires, and maybe that's like my dream. But if we're going to see the screen, it's just going to be the act of cinema, you know, that it was going to just be a change in aspect ratio, and it'd be the sort of immersive. It's funny because before the pandemic, and before we all did use Zoom, you know, but now, you know, maybe people are like, you know, like that sort of way of communicating. But yeah, so it was partly like the kind of future I would want to see, but it was also very much built on this sort of backstory, this world.
And on the other side for you, how do you sort of become a robot? How do you kind of prepare for a role like that? Because I suppose there's a long history of evil robots, lovely robots, Pinocchio robots. How do you decide what works best for you? Do you almost think of what the technology is, or do you think about what kind of the journey of this kind of character is? How do you go around that?
Yeah, you know, I didn't necessarily feel like the pressure to be any certain type of robot, because as soon as I read the script, I knew that this was not a typical sci-fi movie in any shape or form. And so I relieved myself of the pressure of trying to be a certain type of way or speak a certain type of way or move a certain type of way. And at the end of the day, I think what was most important for me was capturing the essence of Yang in these fragments that we get in these flashbacks. And, you know, so much of the film is about grief and loss, and how can you feel grief and loss if you don't feel a connection to this robot? Yeah. And so I wanted to make sure that in those scenes that you did feel that this is the type of person that you could really connect to and that they would grieve over, that it didn't feel sterile in any way. And in my constant conversations with Kay, we wanted to make sure that Yang remained a mystery in many ways, in terms of how human he was or how android-like he was. And so even while filming, it remained a mystery. And it was really on the days where we were filming these scenes that like we would continue to discover new things, and obviously working alongside some of these incredible actors really brought forth new things for me as Yang in those moments as well.
How do you approach a character like Yang? Because he is the purpose for the narrative of the story. He's what sort of sets the ball moving. But like you said, you know, he's like someone's grandma. He's kind of almost in the background at times, and so for a lot of times you're also not on screen, but you're seeing things through his eyes. I mean, it must have been an incredibly sort of challenging part to play, because even when you're not on screen, though, you still feel your presence around. I mean, was it all there in the script, or how did the two of you sort of work on creating yeah, this incredible character.
It was all there in the script. The script is so beautifully written, and so many of the scripts that I read these days, it's so explicit in what it's trying to say and do, and so much exposition and all of these things, and the simplicity of what Yang says allowed the work to like find itself in those moments. Like, it could be the simplest line, and as an actor you have the freedom that Kay allowed me to have to sort of imbue each of these very simple things that Yang said with whatever variation or gradient of emotion that we thought. In terms of the human versus the robot calibration, I mean, it was always a mystery. It was one of the first things I asked Kay, and he never gave me a sure answer. And so I sort of ran with that and sort of experimented and played. And even on the days, I would find things that would surprise me. You know, you have sort of an idea as an actor of how these scenes are going to play out, and then you do a scene with Colin Farrell or Jodie Turner Smith, and then suddenly like everything changes. And it was just so exciting to sort of play in that space. And I wanted to make sure that those scenes, as you were mentioning, they're like fragments of moments, but that they really felt like there was something there that allowed the family to grieve, right? Like, if you don't feel a connection to Yang, then you don't understand why this family is grieving. And so I wanted to make sure that that was all there, and that required a lot of preparation in terms of making sure that the things that were not seen in the film, that a life existed outside of them in terms of Yang's relationship to each of the characters.
And I thought what was quite interesting as well is like, it rejects almost that idea of like robots all want to be human, the Pinocchio element. It's exploring like, what is it to be Asian and so on. What did you find about sort of that kind of aspect of the film? How did you find that?
Yeah, actually, that's the thing that I connected to most. I loved the fact that it was one of the first AI narratives that I'd read where it wasn't all about the robot wanting to become sentient or conscious or human. And it was so delighted to be what it was and to serve its purpose in the family. And, you know, I've talked about this before, but like, it resonated because it reminded me a lot of my parents and their generation in terms of the sacrifices that they have made and the unfulfilled dreams that they've sort of had to give up in order to come to America for the sake of their children. But it is not this like resentful, angry sort of spirit by which they do these things. It's with a joyful, abundant spirit and just wanting to serve the family. And I always felt like Yang was really happy and I wanted to lean into that. And like his love for Mika knows no bounds and he would do anything for her. And so that's something that I wanted to hopefully see reflected and the thing that I really thought most about.
Yeah. You know, I've never really until right now, because I've always said about Justin that in the auditions, you know, he just immediately spoke to me and immediately resonated as something different from all the other kind of takes that other actors were taking. But, you know, I think it was because, you know, he wasn't playing robot in his audition, but he was playing like Asian older brother, you know, which was a real take. Like, I'm not just that, but like ideal Asian older brother, that there was some like incredible sincerity and soulfulness about him embodying Geke, you know, which was remarkable. And at the time, I don't think I've ever been able to articulate that, but I think that's what came across, is that you were not playing robot, you were playing ideal brother. And that was really the embodiment of that character.
I just want to talk about one of my favorite scenes of the year, the tea scene, which, you know, Yang clearly has several roles within this family, whether it's sort of housekeeper, babysitter, but in that he almost turns sort of therapist to Colin Farrell, asking him questions, asking him to expand on his feelings and stuff like that. What was it like working with Colin in that? And I have to ask, where did the what I thought to be a Werner Herzog impression.
Yeah.
Where did the idea for that come from? And were you aware that was going to happen?
I mean,
I read
it in the
script.
Was it in the script?
Yeah.
It was in the script.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to hear you talk about that teasing, but just to quickly explain the Herzog. Yeah, it's from an actual documentary called On This Tea, which Herzog didn't direct, but he shows up in the middle of this documentary, and it's such a lovely scene because this guy who's just pursuing tea with all his heart is like, it's impossible to describe tea, and then Herzog just immediately describes it with such perfection, and so I knew when, you know, so in my mind as I was writing it, I knew that this was the thing that had sparked Jake to kind of pursue tea, and that he would have this memorized, yeah.
I mean, that scene was so special. I mean, first of all, Colin like learned how to make actual incredible tea. So it was like, I just got to observe him making the tea, which was such a fun sort of exercise just to watch him do that. And, you know, you talked about the peace and quietness of the film. I mean, when we were filming that scene, you could literally like hear a pin drop on that set. It was so, just everyone was locked in. And you know, there was a part of me that was trying to fight like Justin's visceral response to acting with Colin Farrell in terms of my admiration and fear and this is Colin Farrell. And then I had a moment while we were filming that where I was like, wait, I could actually use this because in the same way that Justin feels this way about Colin Farrell, Yang feels this way about Jake. He's someone that he has seen from afar and admired and but not really known and has seen as an enigma in many ways. And so I thought that that was just the sort of perfect blending of real life and art. And I got to use all of that for the scene. And we've talked about this before, but like when Colin Farrell like looks at you, there's something about his presence and his energy that really feels like you feel seen. And for Yang, all he wants is to feel seen. And those are the moments where I think Yang feels most connected to Jake. And it's like leading up to this climax where you feel like they're finally connected. And then there's that moment where he drinks the tea and you hear the metal inside of him. And like that connection is immediately lost. And it's a heartbreaking scene for me to watch, as it was to play, because you finally feel like they're getting to this place where they can be a real father and son, and then reality hits them in the face.
Yeah, it's a great observation too about him almost playing the role of a therapist for this, you know, because you do get a sense that at one point Colin did have this real passion for this craft, and there's something that has been missing, and that conversation really sort of resurrects it and rekindles, and also has, you know, they find themselves with this possibility of connection. But I also love the idea too that it awakens something in Yang, like his own longing to have a connection to this thing that he sees Jake making, because it has reference to his own Asianness. And it was really a lovely, lovely to see them play it.
Yeah, because I think in many ways Yang has a connection with Mika and with Kira, but never really had that with Jake. And for the first time, they feel like.
And the irony is that Jake loves tea, and if he should be interested in anyone, it's this person who's this repository of tea. But for Jake, it's not because of the facts of tea that he loves it, right? It's because there's something emotional that he's lost about it. So it's a complicated conversation that I always loved about it. And and you know, it's funny because of the way I knew I was going to cut it, we didn't break the, you know, often you get a scene and then you just have to break it up, but we just allowed them to play that whole scene over and over
such a luxury.
And then you could see it was almost like a play, you know, they would start playing these notes, and they did it like 5-7 times, I think. And it's pretty great.
One thing that broke my heart, and maybe it was just the time of year that it landed, was sort of this idea of like people that we've lost and being able to see their memories or how they think about each other. If you had that option, would you take that? If, you know, a dear or close loved one passed away or something like that, would you take that option to see how they viewed you, or would you stick with just the memories you had?
God, that's a tough question. I mean, That's such a tough question, because I think that would be the temptation, but boy, would that help your grief, or would it just, you know, I mean, it would just really destroy you. But yeah, I don't know. Like my wife lost her father, and she was like, you know, really best friends with him. And I think she would immediately, you know, and then sometimes she'll have a dream, you know, and it has that both effects, you know, yeah. It'll be incredible, like a gift. And also it reignites the pain of yeah. that absence of it. I don't know. Probably. I probably yeah. would.
Yeah. It's just, I think it would be so fascinating. I mean, you feel like you know all of these people in your lives, even those that you're intimately close with. And yet, if you could see the world from their eyes, it would be such a deeper level of intimacy and knowing. And it always fascinates me, because we meet people in our lives at different stages of yeah. their lives, and we don't really get a sense of who they were before or after the season of our lives where we're with these people. So it would be fascinating to know someone before we met yeah. and after we met, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now I changed my mind. I don't think I would. I think I would let it be.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Ignorance is
bliss.
I think the, you know, aspect coming out from a male perspective of like of Jake's character of like you know, how many things that we don't say, you know, how we can maybe kind of pull back our emotions, distance from family and friends, and watching his journey to being a better man and being a better father, you know, husband through that film was really fascinating to me. You know, was that something that you were keen to kind of ingrain into the film, or
I'm so glad you've even articulated that way, because I think that was the journey, and it's such a quiet one, and it's so interior, and we didn't, and you know, I think sometimes you can give an actor real external ways to show that art, and you know, Colin didn't have any of those safeties. I mean, he had to kind of show that journey in the quietest, most subtle ways. And I think for some people, maybe they won't even see that arc, yeah. you know, but that was his journey. And you see it in little ways, and you just see it in his face, you know, I think it starts with a kind of disconnection with his family. And by the end, I don't know if he's all in, but he's in, you know, mm-hmm. he has reclaimed something that he had lost.
And kind of when I think of like sort of Columbus, this fascination with like architecture and then museums, and that's kind of comes back up again. It's like, do we send something like this to a museum, these memories? Mm-hmm. What is it about sort of museums and, you know, architecture, etc., that kind of appeals to you as a yeah. as a writer, and, you know, yeah. visually as well?
Yeah, I mean, God, I am a real, you know, I love those spaces. I love museums. I love spaces in general, like just the shape of spaces and the way in which they define emptiness, you know. I think like even right now, like whatever this is, you know, mm-hmm. has always existed, but without a building, you know, yeah. without our walls, it would be invisible to mm-hmm. us. And so there is just something that's not going to be good for the recording, but know that I'm waving my hand. But there. I think it is one of those things that are like wall. It's invisible to us, but it shapes us. You know, the shape of space shapes us as human beings. We don't really recognize that, but I think that's an important part of me as a human trying to reconcile. And yeah, I'm sure I'm using cinema because as a filmmaker, you know, you have locations, and often background is just that in films, and it's blurry and you never really get a sense of place. But for me, like even when I love films that have a real sense of place, and those are the films that stay with me and they feel like memory. So having an opportunity to make films, that's always just an important part of that. Of what I'm trying to capture.
Yeah, in many ways, I mean, this is just coming to me now, Yang is the embodiment of that emptiness. They yeah. can project whatever they want into him. He sort of becomes the like physical embodiment of whatever their emotional needs or desires or wants are. And that is why I think Yang has such a special relationship to each of the characters, because in many ways it's almost an extension of whatever they need him to be.
I mean, Yang is its own piece of architecture too, and you know, like the thing about Columbus or like even Yang, you know, we live in these worlds where things can become invisible to us. And AI right now is not a part of our daily life, so we may be fascinated by it. But in this future world, it's just like a vacuum cleaner. And we don't look at our vacuum cleaner and think, what a fascinating piece of machinery. But like in an early Ozu film, when vacuum cleaners were just invented, they talk about vacuum cleaners. Like the women talk about it as if it's so special. Yeah. And so, you know, we always lose the specialness of things as they become a part of the ordinary. And I think, you know, I think it is like what we attend to. And museums are these places where, you know, you can go to a museum and see a chair, and suddenly you pay attention to a chair, and you're just like, oh, the chair. But they're also all around us. But the museums often frame what maybe should matter, what we should pay attention to. And I think it really is about attention. You know, it's really, for me, it's about and maybe a kind of cinema of attention, where, which I think Ozu offers us, where we are for these 2 hours or for whatever moment. You know, it's like, what is valuable? And that's what memories are too. You know, memories are a way in which we kind of make this sort of, or sometimes our brain just does it, and some things are memorable and some things are not. And that's the real question of what Yang is recalling and not recalling. So it really is about that, what we value at the end of the day.
I couldn't help but, you know, I'm a Mitski fan. I think there probably is a crossover between people that like your films and her. And I was fascinated with her because she always speaks often about her journey to sort of discovery and Asian identity as well. Mm-hmm. What was it that drew you to her to perform a song?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, she's like for me, like a musician who can capture this moment and longing and emptiness and identity, and it's so raw, and it's so, you know, it feels like you know, it's in music sometimes, you know, there was a real period where musicians were pursuing a kind of authenticity, and sometimes that can be lost. It's very, you know, music is, and our industry, it could be feel very manufactured. But she is, seems to be one of those musicians that is in pursuit of the authentic, you know. Yeah. And so it was a dream of mine. I love this song, you know, that I remember from a film. And I, even before I ever made this film, I thought, God, you know, Mitski would be do such a great cover. Yeah. You know, so as I was writing it, it just all kind of came to be. And then we reached out to her, and when she said, yeah, it was sort of incredible.
Perfect.
Thank you so much. I think I'm out of time, but I have to very, very quick answer. Sure. I co-host a podcast called A24 Project, and A24 is 10 years old today.
Wow.
Obviously, this film was distributed by A24 in the States. It was favorite A24 films.
Oh,
don't feel pressure to choose The Love Song Killing of a Sacred Deer because of Colin, though.
yeah, I mean, I think Moonlight is kind of what put them on the map, I think, you know, but God, there are so many. Whenever someone tells me that I have a list, it creates panic in me because there's just so much. But what about you? What are yours? And you don't say After Yang, but tell me what.
For me, Under the Skin, Scotland's one. Yeah. Moonlight, and obviously After Yang, and recently Everything Everywhere All at Once. Incredible piece of filmmaking.
I don't think I knew it was the 10th year anniversary, but it's great that film came out. Because it's remarkable. Yeah.
I love The Lobster with our.
Oh, The Lobster is fantastic. Yeah, yeah. There's so many.
Midsommar is one of my favorites.
Great.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. Kiku Kwan, who was in Everything Everywhere All at Once, said that he was sort of disillusioned with Hollywood. He was basically retired for 20 years, and then Crazy Rich Asians came along, and he felt actually there's potential for an authentic sort of Asian American experience to be shown on screen. Have you sort of felt that in the past couple of years there has been a positive sort of shift towards being able to tell more sort of authentic stories and have more opportunities?
Absolutely, and I think the real change begins when Asian writers and directors are to sharing our own stories. I think the disconnect has often been when non-Asian writers or directors are trying to share our stories, and that's, I think, when we experience something that feels a little inauthentic. So people like Kay are, you know, fortunately blazing the way for us, and I'm excited for what's coming. It's such an exciting time to be an Asian American artist.
Yeah, I do think this is a real ripe moment for a lot of different stories, and he's such a perfect example of someone who sort of had to go through the struggle of it. We were just talking about how brilliant it was to see him again in such a rich role as well. And so, you know, we're so grateful for those people who really, John Cho is another one of them, who just really had to work for quite a bit of a time before he had a moment to really get to do interesting work.
And that moment was Columbus.
Yeah. And a lot more.
You obviously reunited with Ailey Lou Richardson in this film. What is it about her as an actress that you brought her back, and what kind of relationship do you have as actor-director?
I mean, they should have just joined us, because we've been hanging at this point. Why didn't you just kind of have drinks with us? I mean, there is just, and it's same with Justin. You know, I've been really fortunate to work with actors who, number one, are just great human beings, and you can't fake that, you know? And Colin is certainly that as well. And they're just, in and of themselves, they have a presence about them that I think is magnetic in the least superficial way, you know? And Haley had that. I saw her in a very small independent film, and I couldn't, you know, there was just something about her. And then she really carried this really quiet film on her shoulders. And now I have so much trust, you know, and even did before I knew her, I felt pretty confident. But it's the same with Justin, too, you know. There's a kind of trust that you have with an actor, and then you let them do, you know, you let them just be present in a film. Yeah. And, you know, and a million times that with Colin as well.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Enjoy the night and the experience. Thanks again for
the thank you, guys.
See you there. Take it. Bye.